Welcome back to Cargumentative. I'm your host, Mark Paluta, and joining me in studio today, we have our regular crew. First of all, we have
Mike Salomon.
And Nadav. We have a special guest.
Very special guest.
Hi, I'm Jacob Mashoko, and thanks for having me on Cargumentative. I've been dying to be on this podcast.
So finally. We wanted to have you on for a while. We are missing Thomas Falconer, and I must admit, you could have done a better intro. I think Nadav, you want to have a go at it?
Should we try it? Just for Thomas's sake, welcome back to Cargumentative. But Jacob, thanks for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
Great to see you.
Where is Thomas, by the way, if you don't mind asking?
Yeah, he's got some issues, you know, family, etc. I think it's going to be okay, though.
Okay.
Yeah, we're expecting back soon.
Yeah,
he'll survive. Okay, cool. When do we start talking about cars?
Anytime from now.
The format we normally follow is the first segment we dedicate to news, and I have researched some news subjects, and I thought I'd throw them out there and see what you guys think. So the first one I want to talk about is Mazda. Mazda, we all know pretty well for the Wankel rotary engine. Well, they're bringing it back. They did away with it in 2011 when the RX-8 went out of production. And they're bringing it back, but not in a format that you would think. They're bringing it back as a generator for the electric vehicle, which is pretty cool. So, benefits, pros and cons of the rotary, who can tell us? What do you think?
I mean, it's got a really cool name.
High revving, sounds amazing on the RX-8.
Yeah, so it's high revving.
Yeah.
It's a very low capacity, so it's very small and compact. So they say, and there's very low vibration. So it will run seamlessly under the back seats, generating a lot of power from something very small.
Oh, so they're using it as a generator in an electric car?
That's all it does. So it's like a BMW i3.
Oh.
You can order that with your little generator on this. Yeah.
It's like they call it a range extender, but it's a generator. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
The idea of a generator is that it runs at constant RPM.
Yep.
So the traditional problems of Wankel rotary, which were rotor wear and oil use, because you know what revs it's going to run at now, they can optimize it to run at those revs, so those issues become less of an issue.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know anything about rotary engines other than they make a lot of power relative to their displacement, but they also rev to hell and gone. So
I think
this thing logically wouldn't be a generator. You wouldn't want this thing running at 9,000 RPM.
No, I think
it's quiet and it's smooth. And
I think the smoothness is the big thing. They've apparently got their way around the bad oil seal issue with changing the shape of the rotor, which was triangular. There's now an indentation in it that does away with causes it not to leak. Fuel economy on them isn't great, which is actually something they'd mentioned. And as a range extender, you'd assume it would have great fuel economy. But anyway, I think Mazda just wants to bring their technology back. It's theirs. They don't own it. It's actually been used by other manufacturers in the past, but I think they've done all the R&D, and it's a kind of their thing.
I think it's great. If it's a compact generator unit inside an electric car, range extending, uses petrol when you need it,
yeah.
I don't see why it's a bad idea replacing a small petrol engine.
When can we expect this first electric?
I think it was like 2021.
2021.
Yeah, because Mazda actually don't have anything out there in the electric
car market. Yeah, that's a bit tricky. I think they need to do it like right now. So that means we're only going to get it in South Africa in 2022?
Probably, yeah.
What would the sales be like on a Mazda? The only thing that can make them win would be price.
Yeah.
Why? What, have you got a thing against Mazdas?
No, I got nothing against Mazdas.
Sounds to me like you've got a thing against Mazdas.
I would say you have a thing against Mazdas.
In my area this morning, and I was behind a red. Now, the reason I'm mentioning it is I think, isn't there a red Miata that you guys are, that's in your family?
That's right.
So I was behind, it actually arrived with its headlights up, which is very cool in itself.
Nice.
First generation one.
Sure they weren't broken.
But more than likely. But they were on, so I mean, at least give it a fair chance. But I was thinking to myself, I've never driven any Miata.
Same here.
Neither have I.
And it's like a weird thing. So
I mean, we all have to, right?
It's like so we actually should do a little segment on which cars have we shouted our mouths off about and we actually haven't driven.
Yeah, I think so. You actually drove what?
So I've as Mike correctly says, my mother owns an NA, first generation MX-5.
Wow.
And I recently, just last week, drove an ND, which is the current generation MX-5. They are brilliant. They are so good.
They're tiny.
Which
ones? Ridiculous. They're tiny.
Which ones?
What do you mean?
All of them.
The first or the latest? First,
so they all represent similar things. Small, compact, naturally aspirated. So the current generation is actually the same size as the first generation, which I think is remarkable.
It's gotten smaller than
Yeah. But it comes with all the mod cons. It's comfortable. It's powerful, actually.
Relative to its size.
Fantastic little thing. And to pick up at reasonable prices these days, used.
Yeah, I think Mazda's and they're good looking, huh? So
absolutely.
So their SUVs. I really like the
one that's a Targa.
forgot to post one. I saw one yesterday, the RF, which you said that you really liked, in candy apple red. I forgot to send you the picture.
How does
we'll
it work?
Post it on our social media.
So just the middle part folds away. Would you physically remove it manually, or does it fold away?
No, it's like a Super America. It folds back on a hinge and then goes into the boot.
That's pretty simple. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
So what do we take from this? That Mazda should just do MX-5s and not electric cars?
I've got something. It's a little bit awkward that the driver winked at me today, but that's...
that is awkward. If it was my mom, well, you know, I'll chat to her.
Okay, so in other news, I thought, Nadav, you could talk about going to the launch of the 992.
Oh yes, that's right. Thanks for we'll keep it short because we've actually spoken about the 992 quite a bit on the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had the privilege of being invited to the 992. We call it a launch. Thomas is a professional. He says it's not called a launch. It's called a canapé party. Because there's no test drive, so I'm sensitive to that. They pulled out all the stops. Porsche hosted us at Kyle Army. At the new conference center and the new pits, and as always, there were lights, there were cameras, there were dancing, there were, you know, incredible food, etc. So it always is quite an event to attend. But in the end, it was about the 992. I thought it was quite clever. They brought out a selection of all the seven previous generations of cars.
Really?
sitting for you to look at. And
were they all in a row,
Yeah, they were kind of laid out, and then an early 66 911 on stage, which was actually beautiful.
So how was the actual...
So the 992, the star of the show, so this is my opinion, and of course, you know, everyone's welcome to argue, but these days I find that new cars, they look quite different in real life than they do in the pictures. It's something about the styling and the proportions that don't always come across exactly in the pictures, so I always reserve judgment. I found it a quite flat in the front and a little bit less 911 and more Porsche. Does that make sense? So if you chop the front off, I don't know that you'd say it's a 911.
Really?
It could have been the front of a Panamera or something like that. But
and the back?
The back, divisive, looks pretty good. I think it also depends. There's so many options that there's aero options in the back, and there's remove the exhausts and remove the decals and put the decals and two exhausts and four exhausts, and there's so many options. I'm actually not even sure which is the right one. But on the whole, it's a nicely proportioned thing. Another good looking 911. That's definitely going to sell.
I went past and had a look at it as well on the weekend, and I must tell you, I just really, really, really like it.
You said you enjoyed all the classic.
There's just so much happening with the car that it actually just did a lot for me. So a few things, like there's a lot of parts that are harking back to the original models. So there's two creases on the bonnet which are very, very similar to the air-cooled cars, and it's the first time since the air-cooled cars that it's had it. The car is exceptionally voluptuous coming in the wide body version only. Brilliant. The interior is just a massive improvement, and even the shape of the dash is very similar to the original 911 with five dials, yeah, even like though that. Four of them are TFT. But I'm sure you could probably program that thing to look like a classic 911 dial layout.
They've made very big. The interior is quite different to the previous generation. Mm. I must say that there's been quite a step change with the haptic buttons and the touch screens, etc. My concern, actually, in those cars was that the top of the dashboard plastic didn't feel as lovely as it could have, maybe, for that kind of price
you
range.
You probably ordered with a leather dash, though.
Top tip from Cargumentative, if you're ordering a 992, make sure you get the leather
dash. The leather dash.
You have to have the leather dash.
And in a dark color.
Okay, I think we're going to wrap the segment up.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be chatting to Jacob.
What are you going to chat to me
we're
about?
We're going
to
probe you a bit. We're going to ask a couple of questions about... cars you've driven, cars you love.
Oh, okay,
about
cool.
About your career in radio.
All right, let's do it.
Be back.
This aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amra, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a shit.
Can you please come in?
Okay, welcome back. Mike Salomon apparently would like to introduce our special guest. So, Mike, go ahead.
So, he's not only an all-round good guy, but he's our mate. So, welcome, Jacob Mashokwa. To me personally, he's my sneaker and my stance consultant. So, he's going to be, I would like to say, mostly responsible for the altitude of my bus that's going to hopefully be delivered this week.
Oh, finally.
Yeah, finally. It's on its wheels. It's running. It got some wheel studs, so the wheels won't fall off. Thank you to Mark
Peluta.
Where
they came from. Oh, yeah.
What year is your bay window combi?
Well, this isn't about me. It's more about you, but it is, I think it's a 1975.
Oh, I'm just trying to contextualize.
Mike has so many cars, it's hard for him to remember what year
they are. You have a bay window combi, and just to give a little bit more color to Jacob, on his arm is a Wolfsburg tattoo.
Yes, I'm a big lover of the Wolfsburg brand. Yes. I also own a 76 bay window as well, and I feel like we have some stuff in common.
We're going to be able to race, I think.
I'm sure you'd beat me.
Yeah, I
help,
think.
Help me out, guys. What's the bay window?
The bay window is... So, the first combis that came out had split windows.
Yeah.
So, there were two windows in the front.
This is
and it's a very iconic one, which has like a V-shaped look to the front. The bay window was the later generation.
So, in other words, the single screen is called a bay window. Yeah.
But if you look at the single screen, the windscreen, it actually does do a bit of a curve. Yeah. So, hence, that's where it picked up the nickname bay window. And the name sort of stuck.
And it's
so
can we ask Jacob some
questions
now, Mark? Like
there was a question for Jacob.
Which I did answer.
All right, cool. But yes, Jacob.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have you on here.
Thank you for having me, guys. I've been following your journey ever since it started. I really like what Cargumentative's about. I love the fact that I can always clue myself up with Porsches and 911s. I know that you're all big fans of 911s. When I met you guys almost 10 years ago, geez, that's a long time. You were always just telling me about 911s. Thank you for teaching me about 911s. And thank you for teaching me about my car knowledge. I think the little knowledge I know, I could owe most of it to you guys.
Oh, very cool.
Well, you have
a fantastic speaking voice. You should do this more often.
Yeah. It's almost like you're a professional.
Yeah, so tell us about that, Jacob. We're sitting in your domain.
Yeah, so I've been in the radio game for almost 10 years, always had a passion and a love for it. Recently, came out of the radio game simply because it just wasn't fun anymore. I think I was looking for new challenges. But still going to be very involved in the car space. Cool. As you know, I moonlight as a motoring journalist as well.
Yeah.
Get a chance to drive some really awesome cars. So, yeah, I'm just trying my hand at other things right now. Coffee shop ownerships and doing more voiceovers, and maybe, who knows, you might see me on TV one day. Who knows?
Brilliant.
Who
so
knows?
Tell us, you spoke about car journalism. Mm. Give us some high points and some low points. What have you driven? What stood out?
Wow.
Okay. Amazing.
No, let's keep things recent. I'll keep it very recent.
Go.
What sucks about motoring journalism is the early flights. That's not cool. When you got to be at the airport at like 5:30 in the morning.
Red eye flight.
Red eye flight. That's the name. Yes, I actually only learned this last week when I took my first red eye flight in a long time.
Because your eyes are red.
Yes, and I got to drive the new BMW 850i, M850i. Oh, got to cool. get it right. That's like, what, 390 odd kilowatts. Powerful, powerful motor.
Hold on. You're also a BMW fan, so let's talk about this. What's this car like?
Where did you drive it?
I got to drive it in Cape Town, Franschhoek Pass to be exact.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, so it's a car that's very well balanced. At no point did I feel as though I could lose it. It also just felt like, you know, when you're driving a very fast car, you feel like I'm not in control. It just feels awkward when you're turning. My passenger was also quite comfortable. It was a fellow motoring scribe as well, and he felt as though that being a passenger, he didn't end up feeling very sick in the car.
Right.
When I drive Franschhoek Pass, I throw myself back to when I drove the BMW i8.
Okay.
My passenger at the time also just felt very sick, just trying to take the bends. The car was very like wavy. It wasn't a solid drive. What I found with the 850 was that it's a balanced car, and it's one of those cars that you would definitely look at buying if you don't want to buy a 911. Yes, I said it.
Really?
Really?
Okay, I've seen it in the flesh. Actually, yeah, to be honest, I think they could have been a little bit bolder with the styling, but it is cool.
The rear's a bit tricky. But the front, I think, is quite nice. It's got a nice aggressive stance.
Does it also look like it's pouring a 911 out the back?
No. It doesn't look like the
i8. It's an i8. No doubt.
So they've called it an 8 series, and I think when a manufacturer brings a name back, mm-hmm. because the 8 series has been missing for more than a decade.
Almost two decades.
Yeah, the E31 was finished in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken. That's
late 80s, early 90s, yeah.
You know, you're going to have to. They brought the name back. You're going to immediately look back at the previous one. And don't you think they've missed the mark with the new one a little bit? It's a little bit generic. It's not as, kind of this, the long distance GT long nose. I don't know. There's something missing for it.
So what does it actually compete with? It competes with an E-Class. The E-Class?
No.
Two-door E-Class.
So listen to this. This is actually quite...
S-Class Coupe. Which is quite a cool car. I saw one on Sunday. It's quite a dramatic car.
Hell of a car, though.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Is it really at that level?
It competes... No. Listen, it competes with the S-Class Coupe, right? But they're also taking shots at the AMG GT four-door, because they'll be bringing out a four-door version.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll be bringing out an M8. Right. So they're going faster, they're going crazier. I would have thought that BMW like left it at 6 Series Grand Coupe, essentially. Yeah. So what I think that what they're going to do right now, the 6 Series is going to be the next number that's going to be missing for a few years.
Mm.
I think that's what they're doing. They're just reviving an old number, bringing it back.
Yeah, because they did it with the 2, I mean, yeah.
There we go. And they did it with the 6 Series Shark Nose. Remember the old school 6 Series versus absolutely. That? Yeah. So it's a bit tricky on how BMW have thought about it. The pricing is a bit tricky. The pricing at 1.9 bar, like...
Sure, it's expensive. How's the interior quality? And like, I hear from what I've read, it's pretty bland in there.
It's still a BM. It's what you know BM to be.
Yeah.
When I sit
so functional,
in,
really.
Yeah, literally functional. When I sit in an M4, for instance, or an M3, and then I jump straight into that, I'll have to look twice, you know, to realize that, oh, I'm in the 850. And when you bring out the GT discussion about how it matches up to the old one, the front is, when you're sitting in the cockpit, the front is quite far. Like, the bonnet is quite long. So maybe it does have a bit of the traits of the old one, but I didn't get a chance to, like, experiment, touch and feel the old one like I got to play with the current one.
I drove one the other day. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
What, you drove an A-Series?
Yeah. You
didn't tell us.
Scott's got one. 840.
Wow.
Really? What a lovely car, yeah.
Thanks for telling us.
An old.
All your phones are off.
This is more around your car experience. I mean, this is amazing that you've just told us about the 8 Series, but I mean, you've got a BM as well.
No, I used to have. I sold it to open up a coffee shop.
Serious?
Yeah, the box BM E30325.
You can't drive a coffee shop, eh?
I can't drive a coffee shop, but you know, money was a bit tight. I had to get rid of it. A very special car that my brother and I co-owned. It's just one of those things, man.
Tell us about how you found it. It's a great story.
There's always great stories about how people find cars. Yeah. And I'd actually like Polutsky also, when I'm done with mine, maybe the next segment, I'd like him to tell us about how he found his car. Cars always have a great story. I found
Jacob helped me find a car.
Yeah. I found this E30 literally by leaving a note across the road from Prime Media Broadcasting where I used to work. I was having a coffee meeting across the road and I joked with my friend Donovan, should I leave a note? He's like, oh, why the hell not? Nothing would ever come out of it anyway. I left a note in September, first week of December, the lady called me, and second week of December, I went to go buy the car.
Brilliant. It was a one-owner car, huh?
It was a one-owner car. It had like, what, 190,000 Ks on the clock, full service history. Yeah.
It was clean.
The lady like literally shed a tear when we were driving out of her driveway. Like it was one of those cars that you have a connection with.
Okay, really sorry that my phone was off when you wanted to sell it. I must be one of those things.
I specifically remember like hosting a car event and asking all you guys, are you interested in an E30 BMW?
Okay. Before we run out of time, Jacob, you've told us about your current favorite. Give us an all-time favorite and give us an all-time low point.
No, I said the low point was the red-eye flights. That's definitely
the
low point.
All-time low car.
Bad car. No, there's no bad car. There can never be a bad car out there.
Yes, I like the way you are.
My job is
aren't
to tell people
Lexus
about cars.
Bad?
I didn't drive a Lexus.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Sorry, Lexa.
I've driven everything from a Datsun Go right up to a Rolls Royce Dawn. There's a high point everywhere. So the high point has to be the Rolls Royce Dawn. I think it's just another experience of driving.
It has to be the DB11 story.
Oof, there was also that.
Wow, yeah.
There's so
the 720S.
Oh my goodness! Okay. There's so much to talk about.
But why, if you think there are so many great high points, why is Thomas always saying that all cars are terrible?
He hates cars.
I think he hates cars.
Yeah,
he's not even here to defend himself.
He secretly hates cars.
No. He only likes Toyotas.
No, he doesn't and secretly. Houses. It's not a secret. He's paid
by Toyotas. You think he's on their payroll?
Maybe.
Well, he seemed to like this hatchback that he was driving this week.
Oh, yes, and it was a Toyota.
What was it? 86?
No, generic Toyota. Insert name, who knows.
Or
who cares?
I think it was a new Corolla.
Don't mention the 86. It got way too much airtime already.
Yeah, way too much.
Okay.
Okay, Jacob, thank you for that. When we come back, we're going to test a new segment.
Okay.
One of us is going to have a rant, and the rest of us are going to tell him why he's wrong.
Ooh.
Looking forward.
Be back now.
Young people are making their mark. Get up.
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sebenza Live website.
Or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
All right, welcome back. Our first ranter in our very new segment is going to be Nadav. So the format is we're going to give him some time to rant. He's going to go on. We're not allowed to interrupt him. And after that, we'll have a chance at a rebuttal.
Is there a difference between this and any other time that he talks?
No, it's going to be more like Thomas talking.
But he's just not going to get interrupted.
He's not going to get interrupted.
Right. But that's the rule. But we all have the same privilege in the coming weeks. So you can choose a topic. So the idea is we choose a topic that we're irritated about. That's on your mind. It's weighing on you.
I think it's going to work. I think it's. Let's see how it goes.
So you get a couple of minutes to get it off your chest.
Actually,
and
if you like this segment, let us know at Cogumentative.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And how long does it go on for the rant? A minute?
I've got up to 2 minutes to rant because you guys need time for a rebuttal. I may not have enough to say, but we'll see.
Then we will run a poll.
We'll see whether
run a poll. We want to know if you agree with me or not.
No, we get it or how wrong you were.
Yeah.
Whether you were wrong or
so we're
wrong.
Looking forward to your comments on Instagram. Let us know. Twitter at Cogumentative, please. Okay, so are we ready to go? My rant this week is red Ferraris. Why? Why is it that all Ferraris these days are red? If you look back at the back catalogue, of Ferraris, if you look back to the 60s, which in my opinion is a heyday for Ferrari, where V12 Colombo engine cars, two-seaters and 2+2s in the most gorgeous Pininfarina lines were ruling the roost. If you look at pictures of the factory, if you look at anything in a concourse these days, they had the whole spectrum of colors. Everything was okay. There were browns, there were golds, there were greens. One of the most gorgeous cars I think I've ever seen is a 275 in like almost a racing green. Amazing, incredible stuff. At some point, all Ferrari's road cars suddenly needed to become red. It's an aspirational thing, so I'll go back and I'll explain, of course, that the red comes from each country chooses their own racing colors traditionally, particularly this is something that goes back to the early years of racing in the early 1900s. Every country had their own racing color, and Italy was red, okay? And that particular shade of red that Ferrari used on their racing cars was Rosso Corsa, and that was the red that most people associated initially with Ferrari. And there's a certain link to the track cars and to the racing heritage and to Italian racing heritage because it's red. So when did that become mandatory for road cars? Why is it that everybody specs their Ferraris in red? Now, the red has changed. It's no longer Rosso Corsa. It's Rosso Scuderia, so thank you to Mark for pointing that out. But nevertheless, it seems to be that it's got to be red. Now, someone even said to me the other day, and I want to know from listeners if this is true, someone said, and I quote, one's first Ferrari, he was advising, one's first Ferrari must always be red. Like, why? Who made that up and why? Some of the most beautiful cars I've seen are not red Ferraris. I think that it's fantastic when you have the guts and the balls to spec something that's so expensive that isn't red. Get a white Ferrari with a tan interior or black or anything you like. Please don't get a red Ferrari. That's it.
Is that it?
But there's a common answer there. We all know that. Red makes it go faster. Come on.
Look, this is a new segment, and Nadav, first of all, I just want to say, I think you're better than this. To be just even worrying about a color is...
keeps him awake at night.
But also to have like a personal dig at me when I'm sitting here, we all know that I'm very sensitive. I mean, I'm a person as well.
Sorry, Mike.
You have feelings like an old
person. Yes.
But maybe there was only a red 308 available when you wanted one.
Maybe everyone's just on their first Ferrari still.
Yeah. But maybe you couldn't find a not red 308. That's fair.
How many not red
308? That's because they were all specced red.
So
there's the problem.
So do you want me to have a rebuttal first, or do you guys want to have a little...
So
I have a Rosso Corsa Ferrari, and funny enough, I don't like the Rosso Scuderia. The Rosso Scuderia is a slightly more orange color, which was introduced when Marlboro was the sponsor of Ferrari in the late 90s and early 2000s, and the color to me is too orange. I don't like it at all. But having said that, Rosso Corsa, it's a deep red, and it's very evocative. In my opinion, it's the greatest racing livery of all time. You know, you've got, and I love my liveries. Even in my man cave, I've got Golf sign, I've got a JPS Lotus, I've got Martini. But to me, like, the red Ferrari is the most evocative and the most instantly recognizable racing livery. Now, I think the fact that there's too many of the cars being red actually is the thing that you're worried about, not necessarily whether it looks good or not.
Where's the variety?
So, absolutely.
I personally think it looks lovely.
Yeah.
So I think they designed those cars in that color.
Yeah, but I mean, in fairness, you're not a great judge of character because you took a beautifully green Alfa and made it red. So you're of no use.
Everyone
in this discussion.
Everyone knows that
that's exactly the point. Yeah. So these are people who are buying them who can only just afford them and therefore don't want to spec them in a color that they won't be able to sell. How classy is it if you just say, I don't care?
No. So I'll tell you what the thing is. So first of all, I mean, I've got a red one, and actually my 308 would be red because I grew up with Magnum PI, and I loved that red car. So to me, that's the exact car that I wanted. I do think they look fantastic in other colors, particularly yellow and things like that. But having said that, ultimately, if you go and look at certain of the colors, I take much more flack than what you're giving for the orange 911 that I've got. I get
more flack.
Sure.
I'm shocked.
So many people go and say, "I think that car is fantastic, but I can't believe that it's orange."
It's single
and
orange.
I think more people would agree that Ferrari should be red.
I love it. I love it. But the thing is that
I'm not buying this one. But
No. So because you're not the average person out there. So in the end, okay. And then there's another side of this. Red is the ultimate midlife crisis color. It's screaming, look at me. It's designed that you go up the street and the young chicks will look at you and think, this guy has made it. And we all know that's not the case. We all know that that's not the case at all.
Well, thanks for clarifying, because I was considering buying a red car, actually, and now I'll never will.
But my advice to you on that regards red car was... Why are you?
You're just inside the car. Why are you worried about the color?
Yeah, why are you worried about the color? And I told him to go and put white wheels on it.
It's also why he didn't mind buying an RS7, one of the ugliest cars ever made.
Wait. This guy actually has a point. Nadav, you might have a point.
Thanks, Jacob. I'm waiting.
There's too many red Ferraris around. Funny enough, I was at Ferrari Johannesburg today to go say hi to a friend. When you look at the floor, it's just red Ferraris, new Ferraris, F12, a 488. It's all just red. You're right. There's a little too much red, and I think people have just been, they've been brainwashed into this red lifestyle on a red Ferrari, and people are just going with it. Wouldn't it be cool for you to be like, I don't care? That's what you said earlier,
exactly.
And I think that is very cool.
I don't know.
Look. I'm not taking anything away from saying that a red Ferrari doesn't look good. It looks amazing. 360 Modena. I had a poster on my wall, a 360 Modena in red. And then I remember seeing the Thong Song video with Cisco. And
yeah. The Thong Song.
No. Contextualizing. He had a black F430 in it. And I just thought a 360 Modena in black, stunning. Stunning. But the question is, are you ballsy enough to go for a color other than red?
I believe that in other colors you lose something. I think especially like, look at a 355, arguably one of the most beautiful modern Ferraris. I saw one for sale the other day in blue, and I thought I thought to myself, it should look exceptional, but it didn't. It just kind of blended into the background.
I actually
saw
that.
Did you see it?
Yes.
Some Ferraris have got to be red. A 308 has got to be red. An F40 has got to be red.
So what if I said to you, well, an F40 has got to be red.
Yeah. No, people are painting them, and I believe that they still look better than red.
But what about this? What about if it's the shade? So I will say that actually there's a few red shades, and I've seen a few recently F12s and F12 TDFs that have been released in other reds. That's also okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. There was a beautiful candy apple red. I don't know what the name is that I saw an F12 in. That's still red. Still a red Ferrari. But at least it's not Rosso Scuderia and looks like every single other one. It looked exceptional.
I think I know why a lot of people, when they go to choose the color of their Ferrari, their finger hovers over the red button.
Why?
And that's because of the type of people that buy Ferraris. We know that they're all about the swag. They're all about the cap. They're all about the nylon red Ferrari jacket.
Oh, and the Puma Ferrari
sneakers. Mike just looked up. We got his attention. The keyrings. So there's no other color for them. It has to be red.
Nylon jackets.
But I think your second Ferrari that can be a different color. Yeah.
But also, look, I've just posted to the group while I'm sitting here. I've got a friend of mine who lives overseas. He's a crazy guy, and I'm hoping he's going to listen to this. But he's got a collection of Ferraris and some magnificent stuff. He's actually just busy choosing a color for his Dino, which is a Dino 246 GTS. Mm. And he's going for a shade of green, which is going to be magnificent.
Green. Gold wheels.
And what a classy man.
And what he has is, I've just posted a picture of a Speciale. Ooh. His Speciale, which is a gunmetal gray with a bronze wheel.
And
I'm saying, like, look, there's a lot out there. But in closing, we got to remember who's buying the Ferraris. And if they're midlife crisis cars, they're going to be midlife crisis colors.
So on the subject of midlife crisis and Ferraris, when we come back, we're going to be playing a voice clip of one of the team members driving his perfect midlife crisis car.
That's right.
This is going to be great.
We'll be back.
And it's not red.
Super, 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 super Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
So here I am at Carbon Black Auto, which is an exotic car dealership in Sunning Hill in Johannesburg, sitting here, and they've got three SL Gullwings. Apparently there are only 14 left in the country, and three of them on the floor here. Maybe a little bit of a sign of the times around the classic car market. Also some very, very nice GT3s and weirdly enough two Tesla Rosses. Yep, it's well worth looking on their website. It's Carbon Black Auto. Today I'm going to be driving a very interesting car, something that's quite polarizing actually in Ferrari circles. It's called a California. So it's a front-engined V8 Roadster that has wildly been hailed as a ladies' car. In the modern day of fluidity, I'm going to give it a fair chance. To me, conceptually, it seems like it could be well worth a look. You could actually hear it being started up just in the background. But this one isn't red. This one's blue with a crema interior. So sitting there with its roof off, a folding metal hardtop. Anyway, I'm about to go and see what it's like, and I'll report back shortly. All right, so just started up the car. Fortunately, they just took it to put some petrol in it, so it's almost at temperature. I've got a fanatical attitude towards warming up a car properly, so definitely not going to be revving this thing properly. So far, impressions are that the gear shifts are completely imperceptible. It's a fantastic gearbox, this. Driving position is pretty good. Driving with the roof off, obviously. If we were in the south of France, it wouldn't be anywhere remote. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to throttle it out of a little hairpin. Drivable car. In my view, this is really a car that could be the only car that you own. I mean, not saying that I'd want to swap out cars for this, but I could definitely see its place in the collection. So if I had to look in terms of my own collection, what it could realistically replace, I'd say probably the Vantage. Although the Vantage is a little bit more involving, and that's because it's a little bit more guttural, but by the same token, it is manual, and that makes a big difference in terms of involvement.
Having said that, we did get a couple of waves from some gentlemen, but yeah, it's, at least we can say we've cruised in a Cali.
Here's a little clue about who owned this car before us. It's on Classic FM, which I think is quite becoming for this car.
So besides it being a chick's car, it's an old chick's car.
Yeah, more than likely.
Well done, Mark. That sounded very, very interesting. So you enjoyed it. You really enjoyed it.
So, I mean, look, it was a lot of fun going out and testing the car. And I must admit, it's important that we get out and drive cars before we have opinions on them.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think that's the big takeaway that I got from this.
So just remind us, Mark, it's basically a 430 engine.
It is a 430 engine. Okay. It's got 460 horsepower. It's a flat plane crank V8, so it's a true blue Ferrari engine.
It's their first double clutch gearbox.
Interestingly enough, this was the first generation one, which are the cheapest to buy, but they made three manual versions. Interesting. Those, by all accounts, are the last three manuals that probably were made by Ferrari.
Absolutely, yeah.
And one of them, right-hand drive in the UK.
Oh.
Now, I looked at the car, as I said, it was blue, so not really shouty. The car's not, it's really not a bad-looking car. I actually think there's a lot of the styling that works for me. If I looked for negatives in the car, so first of all, let me give a little verdict as to whether it's a girl's car or not. Mm. It's definitely a car that's easy to drive. It's very easy to live with. So your spouse, your partner, or even if you're the if your daughter were to drive it, it's definitely very livable. And unless you're an enthusiast, often the cars won't work for you. So it's very, very easy to have that car as your only car.
But is it still visceral now?
No, that was the problem that I had with it. But funny enough, I think that easily fixed on this car, and I found out after the event that in subsequent versions, and they did a 30th anniversary version, which came out a couple of years later, and then they did a turbocharged version, which doesn't excite me that much. The two problems I had with it were that the suspension could have been a little bit tighter, a little bit harder, and the second thing is it could have been a bit louder. Now, the noise is easy. You just get a tubey exhaust, and it'll sound like any of the...
Sounded good on the clip.
And it did, but only at high revs, so you really needed to give it. But the suspension, just for me, could have been a lot harder. And, you know, I think that's the kind of thing where you could probably get a suspension kit. Now, just to put it in context, this car, they were asking $1.4 million for it.
How many Ks?
It had 40,000 Ks, but you could see it was owned by an elderly gentleman. In fact, 80 years old, and he's moved into a retirement village, and he's just said he's not going to be driving the car anymore. So he sold the car to Carbon Black.
Oh.
But I'm saying, like, at 1.4, and you know that these prices are still dropping a little bit. I'm saying it's very, very compelling. It's got two seats at the back.
Oh yeah.
Not overly useful. You probably get one person in it, but you know, if you only could have one car.
Sounds like it ticks a lot of boxes. Yeah.
You know, and it's certainly...
Did it feel heavy? Did it feel... No,
it's certainly fast enough, and it handles nicely.
Okay.
You see, now my opinion is quite limited, but I've always looked at the California as you never buy a California. Like, it just hasn't got that swag, that coolness, that vibe. It's not even in red. So it just doesn't do this appealing thing to me. But from what you say to me, at 1.4 million rand, what else would you look at if there was no California? That's what I want to ask.
Yeah, exactly.
So it competes with like an SL.
Good question.
Right?
You're going to buy an SL65?
Yeah, so it'll compete with that. It'll compete with an M6 convertible kind of car. Am I right?
You're still not hitting it, guys. What would 1.4 million rand buy where you'd be utterly and madly satisfied with it? I feel as though there'd be some shortfalls if you buy this California.
Get a DB9 convertible.
No, see, that's the thing. Is I think that you know, the great thing about this car is that you can drive a Ferrari every day. You can make it into an event every time you're driving.
I think if it wasn't a Ferrari, it would be better appreciated. I think it was set up for disaster, honestly. Because I say it's something like a DB9, and Aston Martin's a bit more chilled. You expect that kind of luxury and plushness. With a Ferrari, they've always been so hard-edged and so in your face. And now they've given you a product that's a little bit softer. It's what everyone actually needs as one car.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's not to like? For the one-owner car.
Absolutely. For a one-owner car?
Or one car.
One-car garage. One car,
I'm also worried that Nadav said nothing.
Yeah, I'm battling here a little bit. Mm-hmm. The California goes against everything that I believe in that Ferrari stands for. And as much as I bash on about Ferrari, I am a Ferrari fan. I do love the early cars particularly, and I think that they have an incredible classic heyday. And this, it was their first front-engine V8. And to me, it answered questions that nobody asked of Ferrari. You know, the point of Ferrari is that it is like a bit of swag. It is out there. It is sporty. It is involving. Nobody asked for an everyday Ferrari. I don't understand it. I don't understand what need it was fulfilling. So
maybe
for
they needed the sales.
Well, I think that's exactly it. So because this fulfills the role of a single car, I think what they've done is they've brought the entry point into Ferrari ownership lower. Previously, you could not have a Ferrari as an only car. It would only have been your third, fourth, or fifth car. In Mark's case, like 11th. But this means that you can just buy one. And that means that you don't have to afford three or four cars before you bought the California. And I think what it did is it brought Ferrari ownership downwards. Is that good or bad for the brand? It sold some units, but kind of sullied the brand a bit for me. I'm not sure. I don't know. For me, I think I'd spend my 1.4 million elsewhere.
It's a no from Nadav.
Yeah.
A no from me.
No, it's definitely a yes from me. I'm saying, I'm saying for 1.4 million
Mike's
rand.
Mike's got a 928 though.
Hey, what's wrong with the 928?
Exactly.
For another show.
Exactly.
Okay. So I think
don't discount it. And if you're looking for a very leisurely driven Cali in a not red with a crema interior, go and have a look at the one at Carbon Black. And
sounds
thanks
good.
To Carbon, thanks very much to Carbon Black for letting me drive it.
I need to go and drive it.
Listeners, let us know what you think about the California.
Yeah. So I think I don't know. Producer Page is probably going to kill me, but let's do two polls. Ferrari California, yes or no? Nadav's Ferrari Red, yes or no? The video that Mark did will be up on our Instagram page, and so will the picture that his friend sent him of the black with bronze wheels.
The Speciale, yes. Oh, this was like a Ferrari episode.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
First time. Ferrari theme. Oh, nice.
Makes
guys.
My heart so warm.
Oh. With a guest as well. So, guys, thank you for having me on Cogumentative. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for preempting us. Thanking you for coming.
And we hope to have you on here again.
I can't wait.
Let's
thank
wrap
you again.
This up. Cheers, guys.
Bye, guys.
Ciao.